This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Dark World, written by B.V. Larson, performed by Mark Boyette. Top Secret. Executive Brief Number 866. Author, Equestrian William Drusus. This document and all its supporting materials are to be considered highly classified. No portion of the information revealed herein can be legally revealed, nor can any of the sources or source documentation be leaked or copied without the express permission of the Second Directorate. Penalties for anyone convicted of losing or forfeiting control of access to such documents, whether through purposeful or negligent behavior, include severe physical reprimand and mandatory life imprisonment. There is even legal precedent for permanent execution in extreme cases. Unauthorized personnel who discover this document are hereby ordered to report the incident and destroy it under penalty of hegemony law. Report Introduction. This report summarizes Earth's evolving political situation. It was written exclusively for Hegemony Intelligence Committee members. If you are not a member of that august body, stop reading immediately. This is your final warning. Section 1. The Growing Terran Influence. Earth has been politically united since 2054, when the last nationalists were rooted out and either exiled, imprisoned, or terminated. For approximately 70 years, a period considered by most historians to be humanity's golden era, our role was secure within the Empire. We reliably provided ground troops for hire to any other star system who wanted them. In exchange, we were given access to alien trade goods and were protected by our Provincial Defense Force, Battle Fleet 921. All of that has changed over the last few decades. Starting with the rediscovery of a lost colony expedition to Zeta Herculis, Earth began to expand. Dust World, as it's more commonly known, became our second governed planet. The third was arguably Gamma Pavonis, Machine World. Although no large independent colony exists on that planet, it remains a critical metals mining outpost today. Most of the titanium used to build our fledgling fleet was mined on the rocky slopes of Gamma Pavonis. After these first two, our possessions and territories exploded. With the defeat of the Cephalopod Kingdom, Earth was able to boast theoretical possession of 312 inhabited star systems. Alas, this happy windfall came with two grave caveats. First, we lacked the military power to enforce our will upon so many remote stars. Second, the Galactics have become alarmed by our rapid growth, and they're actively seeking to curtail it. In reality, Earth legitimately manages no more than 9 star systems. These now include Epsilon Leporis, once colonized by the cephalopods and more commonly known as Blood World. But beyond this handful of relatively obscure worlds, the other 300 inhabited planets qualify either as independent rebel states or they roil in perpetual anarchy. In short, Earth's growth as an interstellar power is still very much in its infancy. Section 2. Political Rivals in 2147. We've come a long way, but the natural outgrowth of any success is the rise of competitors. We've managed to maintain an uneasy alliance with the Magua, our patron galactics. Unfortunately, they can't be trusted to defend us as their charter promises. In general, our strategy in regard to the Magua has been that of the kitchen mouse. We stay out of sight and pick up crumbs. To that end, we're gathering strength quietly, but taking great pains to avoid direct confrontations with the Empire. The situation is obviously intolerable, but it's the best we can do at the moment as their strength is a million times greater than our own. With the Galactics brooding on the sidelines, our more direct rivals come to the foreground. We're slowly establishing dominance over choice star systems of the former cephalopod kingdom, but we're not alone in playing that game. The Rigelians occupy an unknown number of star systems on the far side of the lawless cephalopod region. They're busy snapping up new possessions at a rate that exceeds our own. Last, but far from least, are the Wurr. They cannot be discounted. They dominated the cephalopods behind the scenes until we attacked. They've seemingly vanished, but all our intelligence points to the fact that they're still here, still with us. An odd, plant-based life form, the Wurr are something like an interstellar disease. They don't colonize, but rather infect worlds, growing strange megaflora in a green carpet that overwhelms one globe at a time. Like any disease in dormancy, they're always with us, but they evade detection. The Wurr are always ready to flourish and sicken the host at the first sign of weakness. It is this author's opinion that in the long run the Wurr might represent a greater threat to humanity than the Rigelians. Section 3. Policy for the Future. Caution is the watchword. From the point of view of the Magua, we're like a species of useful microflora in the gut. We provide a service, but our existence is hardly a priority. Escalating warfare and gradual expansion are the only clear paths forward. We must be seen as a bulwark against the destructive influence of the Wurr and the Rigelians. To that end, we must identify and establish military control over the most useful of the non-aligned worlds. Unfortunately, our rivals are practicing a similar strategy, but without needing to worry about the opinions of the Galactics. Section 4. Immediate Strategic Goals. Over recent years, we've secured an excellent source of mineral wealth from Machine World. Rogue World provided a tech team that has begun to produce miracles, and Blood World is a planet full of eager ground troops. What's needed next, in this author's opinion, is an advanced base, an industrial center to serve as an outpost capable of mass starship production. This base must be established and fortified quietly. Then, when we're ready, we'll use this base to stage operations deep inside the disputed region. The exact star system to be targeted will be provided in next week's strategic brief. End report. The gods conceal from man the happiness of death, so that they might quietly endure life. Lucanus, at his execution, 65 A.D. Chapter 1. Today I was at Central, that ziggurat of a building squatting in Central City. Central was a man-made mountain of puffcrete and ballistic glass with bones of crystallized steel. Earth's defense forces were commanded from this single structure. Deep inside the massive pyramid, I had been summoned to witness an ascendancy. The event promised to be a promotion among the brass rarely witnessed in Earth's history. Everyone present was an officer, and we all knew the details of the main event. Drusus, a longtime mentor and confidant of mine, if not exactly a friend, was being elevated from the rank of equestrian to that of praetor. These ancient Roman ranks might not mean much to people outside of Earth's military, but to those of us on the inside it was a big deal. Equestrians had 3 sunbursts on their shoulders. Praetors had 4. That might induce an eye roll and an urge to switch news streams among those who were viewing the event live on Hegemony's government servers. But for a lowly centurion like me, the promotion was earth-shaking. There were about 50 commissioned equestrians running around on Earth, but only a handful of praetors. They were the real brass, the top of the top. For my own part, I was happy with the advancement. It gave me a connection among the military leadership that could be good for a man's career. Even better, these sorts of ceremonies and banquets served free food and booze that couldn't be beat. That was the main reason I'd bothered to accept the invitation and join 100 others here in Central to witness the ceremony. Some fat guy with 4 stars of his own, Wurtenberger, I thought his name was, stood up and began making a speech. Essentially, he talked for a long time about how great Drusus was. He reminded us of when Drusus had led the defensive effort on Earth, and when he'd sponsored our successful capturing of Epsilon Leporis, Blood World, just last year. That was all fine and dandy. But like any member of the brass, Wurtenberger couldn't seem to cut it short. After listing Drusus's accomplishments in glowing terms, he kept right on going. He talked about honor and responsibility and 6 other kinds of crap I didn't need to listen to. My mind and eyes soon began to wander, as they tended to do at moments like this. There were many familiar faces in the crowd. I found their expressions interesting. I eyeballed Primus Graves first. He looked like he actually cared about what Wurtenberger was saying. His eyes had seen the worst of the worst, but he still liked pep talks. Next to him was another Primus, a man I liked a lot less than Graves, Winslade. He was a whisper-thin weasel of a man. Winslade's reaction to the speech was entirely different than Graves. He looked suspicious. His arms were crossed, his eyes narrowed. What did he have to fear by the elevation of Drusus? I didn't know, but I suspected a paranoid officer like him rarely cheered for any kind of random change in the status quo. My eyes shifted again. Up front, sitting behind Wurtenberger and Drusus himself, were 2 women I knew well. One was Imperator Galina Turov. She had a look on her face that I recognized in an instant. Glowing happiness. Did she know something? Did she dare to hope she'd move up from her current rank as a 2-star Imperator to a 3-star Equestrian, taking Drusus's spot? It was my honest impression that she expected as much. On the other side of the stage sat Tribune Deitch. She was the current commander of Legion Varus, my outfit. She'd never been an approachable woman, but I didn't hate her. Her arms were crossed, as were her legs, but that expression she was wearing, what was it? Smug confidence? Could she know something as well? It was hard to imagine these 2 women who essentially hated one another could both turn out to be happy with today's events. That would be a rare day if it actually happened. Once in a blue moon, as they used to say. With an effort of will, I forced myself to tune back into Wurtenberger's speech. Fortunately, it looked like he was wrapping it up. The Trinity, therefore, remains whole. Honesty, integrity, and innovation. These things are more than goals for Equestrian Drusus. They are realized simultaneously, all in a single fleshly being. Wurtenberger stepped back, indicating Drusus with a flourish. Scattered applause broke out, and I joined in. Using a technique I'd developed as a non-com, I slammed my big hands together while cupping each palm. This created an explosively loud popping sound. I was pleased to see a few of the men around me, notably Winslade, wince and glance in my direction with evident irritation. I took no notice of this response. I continued to slam my hands together and even whistled once. Drusus! I roared. More glances came my way, more quick up-down appraisals. I didn't care. I ignored them all and I kept on clapping until the applause died down, and then I still kept it up for 5 long seconds after that. Yes, Wurtenberger said when I'd quieted at last. So good to see enthusiasm for this pride-filled day. And now, without further delay, I will present to the world our first new praetor in a decade's time. Praetor Drusus. More cheering and clapping. I wasn't the only one making noise now. Amid the din, Drusus stood at attention while fat boy Wurtenberger placed his new rank insignia on his shoulders. A 4th gleaming sunburst was added to the 3 he already had. I knew Drusus was really feeling it, despite his calm and confident exterior. He was beaming, just a little. I hooted and hollered like it was a high school graduation. I liked Drusus. I always had. He was what everyone hoped to get in a superior officer. Confidence, competence, and honesty all wrapped into one. Just like the fat boy had said. When the crowd had settled down, Drusus made a small acceptance speech. It was mercifully short, but I didn't listen to it anyway. I'd had about enough speeching for one day. My eyes were already crawling over the buffet. A gang of service people and robots had been laying out a fine spread for the last several minutes. The delicate smells of roast pork, sweetbreads, and gravy were gripping my mind. There was a little more clapping when Drusus stopped talking, but there was some confusion as well. What had he said at the end? My brain could almost remember.
Well, this is odd,
Graves said at my side.
Do you know why we're being singled out?
Graves was looking at me. Winslade was eyeing me now, too. His face was full of suspicion. I realized they both thought I knew all the behind-the-scenes intrigue, even though I hadn't been listening. This kind of thing happened to me all the time. People always thought I knew more than I did about secretive goings-on. Sure, I was often involved in events that seemed unexpected, undesirable, or even alarming. But sometimes, like today, I was just as much in the dark as to the nature of events as the next guy. I said, my face went slack and stupid, and it wasn't even an act.
That's what I thought,
Winslade said bitterly, eyeing me with fantastic suspicion.
I knew something was up today. Clearly a reshuffle has been coming.
I don't even know what he said, I objected. I was looking at the food. Winslade made a pfffing sound of disgust. He turned to Graves.
McGill must have gone over your head again, Graves. He's playing dumb. But I'm never fooled by that ruse.
Glancing at Winslade, then back to Graves, I asked the question that was really burning in my mind at the moment. Does this mean we can't eat yet? Graves shook his head slowly in disbelief.
All right, McGill, he said. You hold on to your dirty secrets. I'm sure it will all be made clear to us soon enough.
Around me, I noticed most of the crowd was filtering out. Some of them were casting soulful glances toward the growing spread of food as well. Since Winslade and Graves didn't budge, I didn't either.
Damn.
Sometimes I wished I could listen to a speech for more than 2 minutes without tuning out. But it just wasn't in me. As a result, all my life, everyone around me seemed to know what was going on, while I was in the dark. This was just one more day in that lifelong story, I supposed. After a few minutes, the hall had emptied down to maybe a quarter of the previous crowd. Even Preeter Wurtenberger had ducked out. Counting heads, I noticed that everyone who had been left behind was an officer from Varys. Could that be it? Had Drusus ordered everyone who wasn't in my legion to leave? What the hell for? Why just Varys people? I asked.
Still playing the dummy, are we?
Winslade demanded angrily.
I'm in the dark as to the details, but if you look up there at the stage, there are two women who seem to be in the know.
I looked, and sure enough, Turov and Deitch had remained. They were both looking smug. These two women didn't like each other. Arguably, that didn't count for much, as I suspected there weren't too many souls on the planet who liked them either. But the point was, how could they both be looking happy? I could only think of one reason. Turov was moving up to Equestrian, and Deitch was moving up into her spot, becoming an Imperator.
Damnation.
That would be an unpleasant result from my point of view. Deitch hadn't been half bad as our tribune, and moving her up would mean a new tribune was running Varys. That could be good or bad, it was a roll of the dice. But what really troubled me was the concept of Turov getting Drusus's old spot. She was far above her level of competence already, and in my opinion she'd been a traitor to Earth on a number of occasions. Were they really going to give her more rank? Holy shit. What about you? I asked Winslade. Do you think you'll be promoted to take over the Legion? Winslade was a primus, one step below a tribune. He was junior to just about everyone, but when promotions were handed out, they didn't always go by seniority. In fact, it was my impression Hegemony actively avoided that traditional approach. Winslade looked at me sourly. I could tell that he suspected I was teasing him.
Don't you think, McGill, he said in an acidic tone, that if I were involved in this shuffle toward the top, I'd be up there on stage smirking with the rest of those ingrates?
I said, having to concede his point. Let us come back to order, Drusus announced. We all instantly fell silent. The hall had been buzzing with speculation, and we all wanted to know what this was about. I've held back only the members of Varys, because my first decisions, as a newly minted praetor, directly affect you. I nudged Winslade and gave him a half-smile. He scowled back. He was no optimist. Deciding to stop bothering him, I took a step back. Maybe he was right. Maybe he was being left without a chair when the music stopped today. To that end, Drusus continued, I wish to make two announcements. These decisions have been carefully considered by myself and others, but since you are all personally involved, I'm going to call for motions of support from the body of officers who run this Legion. Graves frowned at that. I knew he didn't like anything that smacked of a decision made by a committee. To his mind, when you were in command, you ordered people around, and that was that. Winslade, on the other hand, perked up and took a step forward. He looked like a dog that had spotted a pork chop. Why? I wasn't quite certain yet. But I was on my guard. The first change will involve Tribune Deitch, Drusus announced. By all accounts, she's performed admirably in service of Varys. Accordingly, I'm planning to promote her to the rank of Imperator. Who here supports this promotion? Winslade went berserk. It wasn't like him, but that small body of his cheered and waved. A few others raised their hands. Graves frowned, disapproving of the entire affair. He stood as motionless as a stone. But Winslade, what was on that weasel's mind? It struck me what was really going on. Oftentimes, management in any organization made tough decisions and desired support from those affected. Disapproval wasn't going to change anything in such a situation, other than getting the brass to dislike you. Loud approval, on the other hand, was an opportunity for bottom feeders like Winslade and I. That's why Winslade was acting like a dog in heat. He was cheering in hopes of gaining favor. Two could play at that game. My support could only make Drusus and Deitch happier with me. Lord knew that I could use some support from the brass now and then. I usually spent my life pissing them off. My own hand shot up. My mouth opened as well. I support the motion, Praetor, I shouted. Deitch deserves it. Drusus smiled briefly. He nodded to me, then to Winslade and a few others. Deitch smiled at us as well. How could they not like vocal support for decisions they'd already made? It did occur to me that I was following Winslade's slippery example, but it was hard to fault his tactics. To me, cheering on a decision that was a done deal couldn't hurt, especially as I didn't disagree with it on principle. Deitch should make a decent Hegemony Imperator.
Excellent, Drusus said. I'll accept this response as a motion carried. Thank you for your support.
Deitch stepped up to center stage, and she beamed down at us. I could tell she was really, really happy. She'd never enjoyed commanding our Legion of Misfits. Now she had finally moved up into the ranks of Hegemony Brass.
I feel like she's stamped our foreheads with her boot heel,
Graves complained. This made me laugh quietly. It wasn't like Graves to talk like that. But he was right, of course. She'd started out in Iron Eagles originally. She'd taken the post as the leader of Varys so she could get some creds in the battlefield. After dirtying her hands on Blood World, she'd gotten the valor she'd wanted. Now she was advancing right back out of Varys, which was lovingly referred to as a shit outfit by members of the more prestigious legions. My next decision took more deliberation. Drusus went on. I'll again ask for support from those affected. We all fell silent, curious. Most people had their eyes on Imperator Turov. For her own part, Galena was playing it cool. She had on her usual too-tight uniform and non-regulation boots to give her a few centimeters of needed height. Was her makeup a little heavier than usual today? I thought that it was. Legion Varys needs a new tribune, Drusus said. Galena's eyes flicked to him in surprise. She recovered quickly, but I knew then she'd been expecting to be given the rank of equestrian next. Everybody got quiet in the room, as we all wanted to hear who our next tribune would be. Galena didn't much care, I could see that right off. She was worried about her own rank. I watched as her gaze moved to land on Deitch. There, her expression soured. She'd clapped politely when Drusus had moved up Deitch, but now things had shifted. If Galena herself wasn't moving up, these two women would have the same rank and both be left serving in Central together. That could get sticky. Suddenly, the whole crowd gasped collectively. I realized Drusus was talking again, and I'd missed it. Sometimes it seems like I can't listen and think at the same time. What did he say? I asked. Sweet Jesus. Graves mouthed. I don't believe it, Winslade hissed. That prick! Looking around, I spotted Galena again. She was on her feet. Her face was white. She looked like her execution had just been announced. My mouth fell open, and I began to catch on. Step up, Turov, Drusus ordered. Join me, please. She did so, swaying only slightly. She had to be in shock. Legion Varys, I present to you your new leader, Galena Turov. A few people tapped their hands together, but it was less than half-hearted. Everyone was in a flat-out state of shock. Now I know this decision might seem to be an odd one, Drusus said. But these are unusual times. Turov has served for years here, flying a desk in Central. We've decided to give her a chance to gain more field experience. Her command skills will no longer be wasted in an office. It was still crickets. A few dared to mutter comments, but these weren't audible to me. No one seemed happy. Legion Varys is our best, Drusus said firmly. No matter what others say about this organization, you take on the hard jobs. The work that no one else wants to do. That, in my mind, makes Varys a legion of heroes. There was scattered applause at that. Graves and I joined in, but Winslade stood with his shoulders slumping, the very picture of dejection. Who here? Drusus asked. Who supports your new leader? For a long time, maybe 2 whole seconds, no one moved. No one clapped. No one cheered. In fact, the only person in the whole room who appeared to be happy was Imperator Deitch. She was smiling quietly from the back of the stage. Today was her day, that was for sure. Then, perhaps feeling the pressure, a scattered group began to bang their hands together. This went on for a few seconds, but it died quickly. Excellent, Drusus said, as if we'd all roared approval. I thank you for your support. Finally, before we eat, there is a last parliamentary requirement. He looked at Turov. She looked like a drowned cat. If I hadn't known how many plots, murders, and general acts of skullduggery she'd been involved in, I'd have felt sorry for her.
As it was, I felt a pang, an honest pang. Galina Turov, Drusus said in a stern tone. According to the military bylaws written by the ruling council, the highest rank that can serve as a legion commander is that of tribune. Accordingly, I am going to have to temporarily demote you to that rank. Do you understand?
Yes,
she said, her voice sibilant and a little bit hissy.
I understand perfectly, Drusus.
Drusus cleared his throat. She'd neglected to use his rank or call him sir. That was a public slight, but I could tell he'd decided to let it go. Very well, then. Legion Varus, let me introduce you to someone you know very well, a true champion of the downtrodden, Tribune Galina Turov. Again, his words were met with mediocre applause. That's it, troops, he shouted. Let's eat. That was the cue I'd been waiting for. Since things were wrapping up, I'd used these final moments to maneuver closer to the buffet. I already had two plates, in fact, one in each hand. If I have one singular talent in this world, it's being first in line for chow. Accordingly, I was dual-wielding my plates before the brass could even get their butts off the stage. Chapter 2 Someone cleared her throat behind me. I didn't even look to see who it was. There was a flu bug going around, and it might have been anyone.
McGill!
Turov barked a moment later. I glanced back. A delegation of brass stood with her. Suddenly, the light went on inside my fridge. The brass was supposed to eat first, as they were the honored guests. My suspicion was confirmed by the Congo line of respectful others who stood off to my right at the end of the long table of food. They each held a plate, a single, empty plate. Here you are, sirs, I said, handing one of my plates to Turov and one to Deitch. Ladies first. Neither one of them looked too impressed, but they took the plates.
A nice gesture, McGill, Drusus said. Perhaps you'd like to join us at our table.
My eyes flicked to Deitch, then Turov. Neither one of them gave me a shake of the head, so I shrugged. Sure, I said, and I followed Drusus closely. A moment later, I was scooping again at the buffet. Every other officer politely waited behind us in that long, long line, but not me. I was stuck to Drusus like glue. It gave me the perfect excuse to glom two additional plates of fresh chow. Drusus watched me shovel and scoop with alarm.
Are you filling two plates for someone else again, McGill?
I said. That is my usual excuse, I admitted. But the truth is, when a man reaches 2 meters in height, well, sir, he gets kind of hungry. Drusus laughed. He was in a great mood. Fair enough, he said. Carry on. We soon found ourselves back at the head table, just the four of us. Deitch was smug. Drusus was beaming. But Turov? She looked like we'd all taken turns running over her puppies.
What we need here is a fine bottle of wine, Drusus said, and he signaled the waiters.
Soon we had full glasses, and soon after that, full bellies. Drusus and I did, that is. Deitch ate sparingly, and Turov barely touched her roast duck. Now, as a matter of public record, I'm a big fan of duck. Tribune? I asked. It took a second for Galina to realize I was addressing her. Less than an hour earlier, she'd been an imperator, and Deitch had been the lowly tribune. Now the roles were reversed. It occurred to me that I might be the first person to address her at her new rank. She gave me a venomous glance.
What, McGill?
I was just wondering if you were going to finish that fine plate of duck, sir. I really like duck, see. She didn't throw it at me, I'll give her that much, but she did shove her plate in my direction with a forceful gesture that could only be called rude. I took this good-naturedly, chalking it up to a bad day on her part.
and wolfed it all down. Satisfied at last, I tuned in to the quiet talk the three of them were having. It's hard to listen in when you're hungry, I always say, but at this point I was three plates into dinner. I'd stuffed myself.
I can't thank you enough for the confidence you've placed in me, Preter,
Deitch said.
I hope I don't let you down.
You won't, Drusus replied. I've reviewed your record carefully. You're an officer who gets things done by the book. I need that, especially here at Central. Turov crossed her arms. She was giving Deitch the death stare, but Deitch seemed immune.
Shall we talk policy?
Deitch asked brightly.
I feel I shouldn't waste this opportunity to talk in a casual setting. Excuse me, Preter,
Turov interrupted.
Perhaps it would be best that I withdraw. I've got an entire legion to manage. Suddenly.
Drusus looked at her. That's why I wanted you all here. There must be some planning sessions, personnel discussions. For example, who's been on your watch list for promotion within Varus, Imperator? The new tribune taking your place needs to know. The two women glanced at each other. Turov's expression left no room for misinterpretation. She was filled with seething hate right now. Deitch sniffed.
I must confess I've been blindsided by this change. I haven't worked up a detailed transition plan. Perhaps over the following days...
Good idea,
Turov interrupted.
We'll meet later when you're ready. Now, if you don't mind, sir, I'd like to go meet with my top people. Many of them are here right now.
All right, Drusus said. Turov stood up like her butt was on fire, but Drusus lifted a hand to stop her from running off. Before you go, I think you should know that a new mission contract has been signed for Legion Varus. Turov's eyes widened. Instantly, she flicked her gaze toward Deitch. If it was possible, which I doubted, she looked even more pissed than before.
A new mission? Let me guess, I'm flying off to some hellish rock to watch my troops die in pits of steaming offal. Am I close?
Something like that, I'm afraid, Drusus admitted. The target planet is, well, unpleasant.
What else would it be?
Turov said with a small, bitter laugh.
Yes, well,
Deitch said, finally joining the talk. She showed some emotion herself.
Be assured, Tribune, that Legion Varus is up to the task. I've come to admire these soldiers. They're far from elite. They're not even regulation troops. But what they lack in self-control, they more than make up for in toughness of mind and spirit.
This surprised me. Never in all my years of experience under Deitch's thumb had I heard words of praise from my beloved Legion. It had taken this promotion, I guess, for her to see the bright side of the outfit she was leaving behind.
Don't forget that I've served with Varus in the past,
Turov growled.
I know all about them. May I retire now, Preter?
Drusus sighed, and he nodded. He appeared to have given up on smoothing things over. I could have told him you couldn't put two cats in a bag with one mouse and hope everyone would come out happy. It just didn't work that way. Miguel, he said, turning to me, are you finished as well? I said, glancing wistfully at the dessert trays. Sure, Preter. I'm full enough. Do you want to discuss things in private with Imperator Deitch? I'd understand. Not just that. I'd like you to go talk to Galena, if you would. I didn't want this to seem like a demotion, like an insult. I sense she might have taken it that way. You don't say? I asked, blinking. What am I supposed to tell her, sir? You two have known one another for decades. Welcome her back to her home. Tell her Varus is glad to have her. Let her know she'll do well commanding a fleet unit again. I didn't know any such thing. Deitch was better than Turov in every way except for appearance. On the personality side, they were about even. As far as knowing how to lead a legion to victory,
Turov was a disaster. The rest of the troops in Varus would all agree with me, I was certain. They were going to be horrified when they learned about this change at the top. But none of that was what Drusus wanted to hear, so I forced a smile. "I'll talk to her, sir," I said. "She'll be full of sunshine by morning." Deitch snorted a little, but Drusus nodded, dismissing me with a wave. Walking out of the hall, I paused only long enough to snag a half-dozen pastries. Popping them in my mouth rapidly, I followed Galena's trail. Along the passages, non-com hogs had been posted as guards. I asked them where she'd gone, and every one of them was able to point the way. That wasn't a surprise. Galena looked like a college cheerleader due to her insistence on not updating her body scans. Whenever she died, she reverted back to the state that she'd stored carefully on the day she'd signed up with the legions. Sometimes she grew to be mid-twenties, but then she'd manage to get herself killed again somehow. Not a hard thing to do in the legions. Then she'd pop back out looking like she belonged in a freshman dorm somewhere. I caught up to her in an elevator lobby. She heard me coming, and she glowered with a mix of suspicion and paranoia.
"Come to gloat?"
she asked. No, sir, quite the opposite. I'm here to tell you that all Legion Varus—
"Stick it up your ass, McGill,"
she said.
"Go back to Drusus and tell him I'm fine. I'm as happy as a pig in shit. Varus, that is."
Next, a thought seemed to occur to her. She narrowed her eyes and tilted her head. It was a calculating look, one I've seen far too often.
"Wait a moment,"
she said.
"I'm sensing a connection here. I was taken by surprise today. That almost never happens. It takes more than Drusus, more than the straight-laced likes of Deitch, to pull off something like this. It takes a coordinated team."
Sir? I said, having no clue where she was going with this particular paranoid delusion, but I was already sensing she was on a dark path. "Let me assure you, there was no conspiracy. At least if there was, it was only between Deitch and Drusus." She took a sudden aggressive step toward me. Her head was forward, jaw set and working, eyes glaring in rage. Her finger came up and pointed in my face.
"So,"
she said,
"you do know something. You were in on this."
She spun away on her heel before I could respond, and she began doing a strutting, wildly gesturing walk around the elevator lobby. I was too alarmed to even stare at her butt. The woman was going off, seriously.
"I've got to think," she declared loudly. "I won't take this lying down. I won't. Not again."
An elevator arrived and dinged. The doors opened, but she ignored them.
"You!"
She spun around again, focusing all that rage and hate on the only handy target.
"You're always around, aren't you?"
she demanded.
"Always pecking at the sorest of sore spots, playing the fool, but hidden in plain sight. I've underestimated you for years, McGill. What I want to know is this. Why didn't you demand the rank of Primus as part of this grand bargain? Why not press for that as your blood price?"
"Galena, I didn't—"
"Too obvious, eh? Too clear-cut? No, no. You like to get your revenge in the coldest way. You play the long game, McGill, don't you?"
The elevator gave up, closed its doors, and whisked away to another floor. I reached out and pressed the call button again for her. "Imperator, I mean, Tribune." I stopped and sighed. She snarled at me, stung by my accidental reminder of her demotion. "Listen," I said. "I didn't do this to you. Someone did, I'll give you that, but Winslade and I were as surprised as anyone when the announcement was made." Galena heard me, but she didn't take my words to heart. She seemed to be listening to some internal demon instead.
"It was that business last year, with Thompson, wasn't it?
She demanded.
You didn't like me putting an agent on your tail. At least now you know how it feels to be spied on.
It was my turn to frown. I will say that was rude on your part, sir. I liked Evelyn a lot. I think she even began to care for me some at the end.
Galena snorted.
The great lover McGill, crying over a girlfriend who played him for a fool. I'm supposed to believe that?
She was starting to piss me off. I can take a lot of abuse, but eventually it lights my fire as well. You're downright crazy tonight, I told her, and that's not going to get your rank back for you. Again, she gave me that calculating tilt of the head. She nodded to herself as if hearing a voice I couldn't.
All right,
she said, quieting down.
I see how this game is to be played. Tomorrow morning I want to see you, Winslade, and that little slut you just professed your love for, Thompson. All of you, in my office.
An elevator arrived and dinged again. This time she stepped inside.
In my office by six,
she repeated. Then the doors shut, and she was gone. When she vanished, I shrugged. Sometimes it seemed like there was a long list of women who were angry with me. Tonight's example had been both unfair and unusually vehement, but it wasn't anything I hadn't heard before. I headed back toward the buffet, planning to eat my fill of those pastries, but I didn't quite make it there.
James?
A soft voice hissed. I turned to see Specialist Evelyn Thompson. She was the bio girl I'd had a lot of trouble with over the years. Evelyn was still pretty, in a too skinny way. In the past, she'd looked at me with a sour expression, but ever since last year, when she'd seduced me and spied on me, her eyes had held a different light. What is it, Specialist? She looked pained.
Look, James, I never got to talk to you after last...
Seriously? I asked. You're going to make another play? Turov just left moments ago. Maybe you'd like to call her back up here to have her judge your performance. She sighed.
I know, I deserve all of that. But I've got something, I've found something. I don't want to give it back to Turov, and I don't want to have it in my possession. Will you take it?
She had me confused now. Take what?
This,
she said, sliding a paper-wrapped object out of her purse.
They thought it was destroyed, but it wasn't. It survived the year Central was bombed to ruins.
Evelyn was talking about a day long ago when the cephalopods had invaded Earth and almost taken out humanity. In those dark times, we'd almost lost a war for extinction. Fortunately, it had been the squids that had paid the bigger price. What is it? I repeated, beginning to tear at the packaging.
Don't,
she said.
Not here. Do it in private, where no cameras can see. Make sure nothing is watching, not even your tapper.
Frowning at the package, I nodded. Something about her urgent words had sunk in. She was full of fear, and I figured she probably had good reason to be. What the hell should I do with it?
You'll think of something,
she said, stepping onto an elevator.
Just don't tell anyone where you got it, not even if I'm dead, not even if we're both dead.
She wasn't making any sense, but before I could press her for more, the elevator's doors snicked shut, and she vanished. I turned the package over and over in my hands, frowning. Then I went back to my hotel room in the city and tossed it onto the couch. By morning, I'd forgotten all about it. Chapter 3. At 6 a.m., I was yawning and slouching outside Turov's office door. Her secretary was in there, ignoring the three of us. Winslade was looking paranoid, and Adjunct Thompson appeared downright scared.
She's in a really bad mood this time, Evelyn said for the eighth time. When is she in a good mood?
Winslade asked sourly. She's late, I said, yawning again and rubbing my face. I wasn't used to military mornings yet. I'd received my summons, of course, just like the rest of the Legion. I'd planned to go back home after this awards ceremony and spend the week with my folks. But that wasn't likely to happen now. If the brass didn't put us on deployment and shove our butts onto a lifter bound for space, then Turov would probably assign us something punishing to do. Either way, the week was turning out bad. Hey, adjunct, I called out to the man who played her office boy. Any word from the Tribune?
Nope, Centurion, he said loudly. She's not in yet.
I eyed the secretary narrowly. He was a big fellow, blondish hair, wide shoulders. Suddenly it struck home that he was a little bit like me. Could it be that Turov had chosen him for his looks? Shrugging, I lost interest. Galena was a puzzle with a few pieces missing on the best of days. It was almost 7 in the morning when she finally strolled into the office. I was slouching on her couch by then, and she kicked my foot hard. I woke up with a jerk.
Oh, good morning, sir.
In my office, she said, jerking a thumb toward the door. All three of you.
Exchanging worried glances, Thompson and Winslade scuttled inside. I brought up the rear, yawning and looking bored. When we were inside and the door was shut, Turov circled her desk in front of us.
Sit down,
she ordered, and we did. She looked at each of us in turn, squinting hard into our faces. I felt like I was being judged or maybe sized up by a butcher for a good skinning. It was hard to care much. I'd taken a lot of punishment in my years of service, and I doubted this would be any different.
We had quite a quaint little ceremony yesterday, didn't we?
Turov said.
Did you all enjoy it?
Food was good, I said. The others were stone silent.
Right. What I really want to know is what went on before that fateful evening. Who knew about these changes in ranks, and who didn't?
It took me by surprise, I said without hesitation. The other two were a pair of mutes fixed in their chairs. She nodded at all three of us, but she lifted a finger and directed it at me.
You see this?
She said as if I were a slab of meat.
That's genius at work. He responds when he shouldn't. He plays the part of the bored simpleton, when in actuality he's scheming all the while.
At this, Winslade and Thompson dared to toss me a glance. It was my impression they disagreed with her paranoid delusion, but they were too smart to say so.
You two, on the other hand, Galena continued, are playing it safe, staying quiet and low and mouse-like. Well, it won't work. None of this will, not for any of you, not today.
But, sir,
Thompson protested,
this isn't fair. I've been loyal. If I'd known anything about Teacher's power play, I would have warned you.
Galena stared at her, and Thompson dared to stare back. Finally, Galena nodded.
I believe you. That's why you're here. It's the other two I'm still contemplating.
Excuse me, Tribune, I said, having stayed quiet through this drama for long enough. What exactly are we all doing here at 6? No, make that 7 in the morning.
Your fates are being decided. I've been thinking about this all night long.
I saw the dark smudges around her eyes then, and I believed her. Could she have cried last night? Makeup could only cover so much.
Sir, Winslade said, speaking up for the first time,
I'm the one who shouldn't be here. I have always supported you from the very beginning. As long as it suited your purposes, yes. But you sucked up to Deitch just as hard when she was your commander. Don't think I don't know that. Loyalty is thin in this room. Very thin indeed.
I yawned again. I didn't mean to, as it was a rude thing to do, but I was sleepy and bored. I just couldn't get myself to care about her little show. So, I said, what next?
Galena smiled then. It was a tight, nasty thing to see. I didn't like it at all. She dug a small box out of her drawer, then two more. She handed one of them to each of us. I stared at mine. I knew what was most likely contained in that box. New rank insignia. In just such a lofty office in Central, I'd been given the rank of adjunct. More recently, I'd been promoted to centurion, the equivalent of a captain, in days gone by. What did this box hold? I wasn't sure.
Open yours, Thompson, Galena said. I don't want to, she said stiffly. I order you to open it.
Thompson looked traumatized. I knew why. She'd been demoted before, having reached the lofty rank of centurion among the bio teams. She'd been busted down to specialist years ago. Now she was fearful of another demotion. Would she become a regular, or even, God forbid, a lowly recruit again? Trembling a little, she opened her box. Her face lit up, and she showed off what was inside, the red crest of a centurion.
Congratulations, girl,
I told her. She looked so happy, she sighed and thanked us all.
Now, gentlemen, Galena said, it's time to open your boxes.
Winslade went first, and I could tell by the look on his face he'd begun to hope. But those hopes were instantly dashed.
I'm a centurion again?
He demanded.
Technically, it's for the first time, she reminded him. You jumped from adjunct directly to primus years ago. This is... I must protest in the strongest terms, Tribune. Would you like to file a grievance with Legion Varus?
She asked in a sly voice.
I will. Fine. You can leave it with my secretary in the outer office. I'm the final voice in this Legion now. An absolute dictator. I'll go to hegemony then, he declared. This is unjust, unwarranted. Go, go. By all means, go. Tattle to whoever you want in all of Central. Trust me, no one will give the slightest shit what you say.
Winslade got up and slunk out of the office, shoulders hunched in rage and defeat. Evelyn stayed, however, watching Galena and I with a frown. Galena's eyes turned to me next. So, I said with a smile. You made me a primus, didn't you, sir? To replace Winslade?
An excellent guess,
she said, gesturing toward the small box in my big hand.
Open it, James. I insist.
I did so, and my heart sank. A single bar gleamed back at me. The rank of adjunct. I'd been demoted. A grin sprang up onto my face.
This is a surprise, sir, I said in false excitement.
Truth is, I never really felt comfortable in command of so many men.
Good,
Galena said, not fooled at all by my bullshit.
You'll be happy to hear that Winslade will be your new centurion, relieving you of all that stress. Follow him well and die at his side, like the loyal hound that you are.
Thompson frowned at me, then Galena.
Why are you busting McGill, sir? Did you witness the ceremony yesterday?
Turov said softly.
Yes, of course. On video. Who cheered the hardest when Deitch was advanced to the rank of Imperator?
Thompson glanced over at me, but she didn't say anything.
That's right. McGill and Winslade were practically doing handstands for that cold bitch. And then, when it was my turn, they were as silent as mice. You think they knew?
Yes, I'm sure of it.
Thompson shook her head, and she looked down at the rank in her box. She closed it and stood up.
May